Hello, I'm Oliver Wang.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks. Every episode, we invite a guest to talk about a heat rock. You know, lava, fire. Today, we'll be deep diving together into Kendrick Lamar's debut studio album from 2011, Section 80. You are a loner, loner, marijuana, end office make you stronger, stronger. I'm in the house party,
tripping up my generation, sipping cough syrup, blank as water, never no pancakes in the... Section 80 was the debut studio album for Kendrick Lamar, released in the summer of 2011. Up until that point, the Compton rapper had built his reputation on a string of mixtapes going all the way back to 2003. But Section 8 was the tipping point for his emergence on the national stage through songs like Hole Up, Rigor Mortis, Keisha Song. These didn't just boost his popularity. They helped to shape our understanding of Kendrick Lamar's personality as an artist, someone who was introspective, perceptive, and more than a little eclectic. In writing about Section 80 for Pitchfork, Tom Breen said that it, quote, stands as a powerful document of a tremendously promising young guy figuring out his voice. Now, speaking personally, Section 80 was certainly my introduction to Kendrick Lamar, especially when I first heard songs like ADHD, which you're listening to in the background right now, and I thought, who the hell is this guy? And then she started... Then she started feeling herself like no one else in this apartment. Beg your pardon, oh, I rap, baby. How old are you? She say 22, I say 23. Okay, then we are...
To talk about Section 80, we invited composer and pianist Chris Bowers. He was born and raised in Los Angeles, having studied at the County High School for the Arts before taking his talents to Juilliard. He's the winner of the prestigious Thelonious Monk International Jazz Competition, and these days can be found scoring both Netflix's Dear White People and Amazon's animated adaptation of Ezra Jack Keats' Snowy Day, for which he won an Emmy last year.
Nice.
Chris, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate that.
Part of why we wanted you here to talk about Section 80 is because you have a specific relationship to the album, or at least a song from it. Tell us more about that.
I have this cover of Rigor Mortis that I put on YouTube. That song and that album was my introduction to Kendrick Lamar. I remember my assistant, Sam, he actually wasn't my assistant at the time, he's just a family friend. He showed me the video for Rigor Mortis when it first came out, I think back, like you said, back in 2011. Yeah. And I immediately was so viscerally moved by his approach to lyricism and rhythm, and the track was just really mind-blowing. And it was also funny enough that the track actually sampled a song that was written by a teacher of mine named Eric Reed. And so it just kind of all felt very exciting. And so I kind of became a fan instantly.
Where were you in your life when you first encountered this album? What was going on for you?
Wow. So 2011, I think it was right before I had won the Monk competition. So I was in Juilliard. It was probably my second year master's, maybe finished my first year master's, and kind of trying to figure a lot of stuff out, you know, because going to your first year master's, you're about to face the real world pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And had I not won that competition, there were a lot of things that I was very fearful about having to really try to figure out. So, that's kind of where I was, just like most college seniors or whoever's in your last year of school trying to just freaking out about the real world coming in on you, closing in fast.
For sure.
So had you heard him on one of his gazillion mixtapes prior to that? I think Overly Dedicated had come out maybe the year before.
No, not at all. And actually, no, that's a lie. I did a show with Q-Tip. It was like the hip-hop festival in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn mm-hmm. Hip-Hop Festival. And Kendrick Lamar was performing that day. And I remember walking through, and it was like daytime, so, you know, you usually don't pay attention to the artists that are there during the day. And so we're walking through, and a friend of mine was like, oh, yeah, this guy Kendrick Lamar, he's really dope. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'll check him out at some point. Yeah. But that was before he blew up.
Did you think of him as an inherently L.A. artist?
Yeah, I think that became more prevalent maybe in Good Kid, Mad City, yeah. Given that it sounded very like just threw me back to my youth in L.A. and like Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg and that whole like kind of era of West Coast hip hop. Man down.
Grandma stay on my nigga. This mad city I run my nigga. That was going to be my question. What did you, besides jazz and obviously soul, what kind of hip hop were you listening to growing up, or what were you attracted to hip hop wise?
Hip hop wise, growing up, my cousin's a rapper. His name is Murs, and so he was definitely. Although he was a family member, I was also a fan of him growing up. And he and his brother really introduced me to a lot of stuff.
So we got to pump the brakes for a quick sec, because that's awesome, number one.
Shout out to Murs, though. Yeah. Shout out to Murs.
He's running for his life. The fucked up thing is this week it happened twice. This time the essays, bald head and tattoos. Mad because he dating their cousin and he a black dude.
And I'm guessing you're probably, what, maybe half a generation younger than him. So at what point did you realize or were told, oh, by the way, your cousin Murs is a really well-known rapper out of Los Angeles?
Pretty early. Like, his brother, Nate, he used to pick me up from school sometimes and, like, took me to concerts. And he always would kind of, like, you know, bang that into my head, essentially, kind of, like, playing me a bunch of Murs' stuff and kind of really making it known that my cousin was doing really dope stuff. And it wasn't until... My parents were pretty strict about listening to explicit stuff when I was younger.
Sure.
Anything that I got that was, you know, parental advisory, they would immediately take from me and, like, and buy me the clean version.
Even when it was family?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So I actually didn't see a Murs concert until I was probably, like, 16 years old, 17 years old. So that was pretty funny.
Because then they used to have, like, the little labels on the outside of the CD.
Exactly.
So you just knew, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I got those cousins, Nick and Nate. Murs' name is Nicholas. And so Nick and Nate, they bought me The Chronic when it first came out for Christmas, and my parents immediately took it and didn't let me listen to it.
Mr. Buster, where the fuck you at? Can't scrap a lick, so I know you got your gat, your dick on hard from fucking your road dogs, the hood you threw up with, niggas you grew up with.
So yeah, so when I was growing up, it was mostly like, you know, the not cliche, but kind of classic stuff like Dr. Dre and Tupac, Snoop Dogg and all that stuff. And then the stuff that I found enjoyable was like Ludacris and Mystical, Outkast, like the Atlanta rap and then also like Tribe Called Quest and Wu-Tang and all the East Coast stuff. I think that those were the things that I was listening to.
Stern, firm, and young with a laid-back tongue. The aim is to succeed and achieve at 21. Just like Ringling Brothers, I'll daze in astound. Captivate the mass because the pros was profound.
I'm wondering to what degree your training in jazz music and basically learning to be a musician, how did hip-hop, if at all, influence the way you thought about music and sonics and rhythm and all these elements?
I think just the fact that it it makes you want to move immediately. You know, I think there definitely is a lot of jazz that makes you want to do that. But when I was studying it as a middle school and high school student, I was studying a lot of like bebop music and the eras of jazz that, to be honest, don't really are harder to dance to unless you kind of grew up with that music and in that era. And so I think for me, hip hop and R&B and certain things kind of felt like home, because immediately I can put that on and I knew how to move to that and I knew how to dance to that. And that's kind of where it was centered around. And so I think whenever I played music, it was, or especially wrote music, even at that age, it was all about trying to write things that people could move to and dance to.
Maybe this is just a consequence of my age, where anything less than 10 years still feels recent. But it's amazing to consider that Section 80 came out only 6 years ago, first teased in the spring of 2011 through the leadoff single, High Power.
Visions of Martin Luther staring at me. Malcolm X put a hex on my future. Someone catch me. I'm falling victim to a revolutionary song. The Serengeti's clone. Back to put you backstabbers back on your spinal bone.
Chris, when you look at what's happened to Kendrick in those 6 years, he's gone from being the new kid out of Compton to the best rapper alive to being one of the most important pop artists of his generation. What has it been like for you to witness that progression in real time?
Yeah, I think it was maybe around To Pimp a Butterfly that I kind of marked him in my mind as like, you know, one of the greatest artists of all time, and yeah. Comparing him to Miles Davis, for example. And I think one of the things that has always struck me about Miles is the fact that like he had all these periods or these eras, and he did a very good job of transitioning from period to period while maintaining some sort of identity and not doing it in a way that made people confused as to who he was as an artist, but at the same time continuing to evolve. once I saw the transition from Section 80 to Good Kid, Mad City to The Pimp a Butterfly, I was like, oh, wait a minute. He's actually an artist that is trying to slowly morph from album to album and is unafraid to do that. And I think that was kind of what made me really excited about him.
I'm wondering, where do you see Section 80 stacking up within his broader catalog? I mean, now, you know, we have four or five albums deep to sort of compare it with. Where does this album stand relative to the other ones?
I think it's one of those things that is like separate from the other ones, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's like it's his, in my mind, freshman album, and it's mm-hmm. kind of like his first statement. And so therefore, I can't really put it up against these other albums because like this is somebody that was, you know, when it's your first album, this is your everything that your entire however many years you lived in one album. And then the albums that come after that are like the things that you've thought about in the last year or 2 years or how you've grown since then. And so I think it's definitely up there very high, but again, separate from all the other ones just because I feel like you can't compare them.
So off this album, right, off of Section 80, what to you is the fire track? What is the one that will always get you hyped?
It's tough. I guess hyped, quote unquote, I would say rigor mortis just because like it baffles me every time just how ridiculous it is.
In my mind, I'm out the orbit, you're an orphan and a hairdresser combined. I'm on the toilet when I rhyme. If you the shit, then I decline. I climax where you begin and then I end on cloud nine. And that's important when you morph into an angel in the sky.
But as far as what hit me the strongest when I listened to the album was Keisha's song.
And Lord knows she's beautiful. Lord knows the usual's leaving her body sore. She take the little change she make to fix her nail cuticles. Lipstick is suitable to make you fiend for more. She play Mr. Shakur. That's her favorite rapper bumping. Brenda's got a baby while a pervert yelling at her. And she captured features of a woman. But only 17, the 7 car star hunking. She start running like FloJo.
To see an artist, especially a rapper, be so raw and so emotional and so honest, that was something else that made me feel like, wow, this is somebody to really pay attention to, because I feel like that's missing in a lot of art, especially in rap, because it's all about optics. It's all about like saying how much I have and what I've done and all that kind of stuff. And for him to really bare his soul and be unafraid to like, you know, I think it's on that track that he's kind of crying, at least. And he's definitely done that in other tracks, if it's not that track. And to hear that is just reassuring as an artist that it's okay to be honest, and that if you don't maybe adhere to the again optics of being great, that you have these other moments of insecurity or sadness or whatever, that's okay to actually share in your art, you know. And I think that's something that's lacking today.
Like decoys, remember Sergeant let her slide, said if he seen what's between her thighs he'd compromise. To no surprise she took the ultimatum round the alleyway and gave him a warm welcome that felt him right below the navel.
I think what I love about this is that not only does this song stand on its own for all the reasons, Chris, as you're laying out, but then Kendrick comes back an album later and references the same song.
Yeah, that's
right.
Right.
And sort of breaking the fourth wall in a sense, because he's basically responding to the criticism that some people had about him seeming kind of condescending or a bit of a mansplainer, I guess, on Keisha's song. And then that works its way into Sing About Me.
You wrote a song about my sister on your tape and called it Section 80. The message resembled Brenda's got a baby. What's crazy was I was hearing about it but doubted your ignorance. How could you ever just put her on blast and shit, judging her past and shit? Well, it's completely my future. Her nigga behind me right now asking for ass and shit.
And how many artists back reference their own songs in that sort of kind of introspective and being open to some level of criticism kind of way? I mean, this really goes back to the point you were making.
Yeah, for sure. I think it shows such self-awareness to unafraidness to be able to do that. It's really impressive.
And I see that a lot in his career in general, that he accepts criticism, but he's also very aware of his own flaws. I think in one song he says, you know, people wonder how I talk about money, God, and clothes and hoes all on the same track. So he's aware that there's a little bit of a dichotomy, you know, in terms of theme.
Talk about money, hoes, clothes, God, and history all in the same sentence. You know what all the things have in common? Only half of the truth, if you tell it. See, I spent 23 years on this earth searching for answers. Till one day I realized I had to come up with my own. I'm not on the outside looking.
It's also funny, going back to what you said about him referencing all these different things in one song, it's funny to see even that the album cover of Section 80 has like, you know, has like condoms and weed and then bullets and the Holy Bible. Like, you know, it has all these things that seem juxtaposed against each other, but it's like, no, this is one person that actually really heavily believes in or needs these different things, you know, and it's pretty awesome to show that.
We'll be back to talk more about Kendrick Lamar's Section 80 with composer and pianist Chris Bowers after this break to hear about some other great Max Fun podcasts.
SF Sketchfest is just around the corner, January 11th to 28th, and there will be plenty of Max Fun shows there to represent. We're bringing Judge John Hodgman on the 11th, Jordan Jesse Go with special guest Andy Richter on the 12th, Schmanners on the 14th, We Got This with Mark and Howe also on the 14th, The Greatest Generation and Friendly Fire Podcast Super Show on the 17th, Pop Rocket host Guy Branum's talk show The Game Show on the 19th, and One Bad Mother on the 21st. You can learn more about these shows and get tickets at MaximumFun.org/SFSketchfest18. Get your tickets now.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband host, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife host, Teresa McElroy.
And together we present Schmanners.
It's extraordinary etiquette
for ordinary occasions.
We explain the historical significance of everyday etiquette topics, then answer your questions relating to modern life.
So join us weekly on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
No RSVP required.
Check out Schmanners.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it?
We're back on Heat Rocks, talking with Chris Bowers about Kendrick Lamar's debut full-length LP, Section 80. So, Chris, we've already talked about the fire tracks. Is there a sleeper jam on this album for you?
I don't know. That's tough. I might be biased because, like, I feel like all the tracks are dope, and I can definitely, every single track when it comes on, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember listening to this very vividly. But maybe, oh, maybe like Cushion Corinthians, maybe that's one that people don't reference as much that I still think is a really dope track.
You never know when a bullet might hit and you died to it, died to it, died to it, died to it. Live your life, live it right, be different, do different things. Don't do it like he did, cause he ain't what you is, but we can win. Wait, let's get straight to the point.
The way that the track is made and the way that he raps on the track is again very reminiscent of Fly Low and like and Dilla. The way that he like lays back and the way that the beat like really lays back on itself is really dope.
Will he give me receipts? I wonder with the eyes of the Lord. Look at me, look at me, look at me. I'm a loser, I'm a winner, I'm good, I'm bad, I'm a Christian, I'm a sinner, I'm humble, I'm loud, I'm righteous, I'm a killer. What I'm doing, I'm saying that I'm human. Now people just ride to it, ride.
And then again, the battle between the spiritual and the secular, Kush and Corinthians.
Yeah, exactly.
Here we go again.
I just got that. I just thought it was the alliteration. Mind blown.
Sometimes you need both.
Oh man, for sure. My favorite track is actually Kush and Corinthians.
Nice.
But so thank you for shouting that out. Rigor Mortis is probably my second favorite, and that's in large part to the horns.
All right, here we go, third take. Real quick, Ali. Got me breathing with dragons. I'll crack the egg.
I got stuck on those before I even realized what he was talking about, right? Because I think the horns influence the mood and the tempo. And once I realized what he was talking about, what he's really saying, that I'm out here just like killing MCs, you're dead. I'm deading you out here. Then the horns to me make it a battle rap. It's like, it's almost like he could be walking into a boxing match that way.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I would compare it to this story that Wayne Shorter told me once, where he said that apparently Miles Davis's bodyguard was an ex-boxer, and they were having a conversation about boxers, and this bodyguard said that he felt like younger boxers had less moves and more predictable moves because they worked out listening to hip-hop or listening to R&B or listening to like a much simpler music, when his era or his generation listened to jazz while they worked out. And because of that, that just influenced a different approach to rhythm and a different approach to you know, jazz has such a again a syncopation to it and a disregard for the norm that I think that's kind of the biggest thing that I hear in Kendrick's music. It feels very much like somebody improvising over a form, and that's not afraid to impose other things over that harmony or go off on a small tangent and then still come back to the form or do these things that that are, yeah, just for lack of a better term, very jazz-like. You know, I think that's the thing that I hear his lyricism. We all are sinners. Once you sinners, the Bible study faster. Your hypocrite is reaction of blasphemy. I assassin my casualty, and it's casually done. And tell him my salary coming. Lump so 100s, don't talk to me about no money. The sun is under my feet, and I come.
I love that, because it is, a lot of it is him jumping off and going off and then coming back. And you're mm-hmm. right, that is sort of the nature of improvisation, right? It's not yeah. that you're always out there. It's that there's an anchor, and you dip your way out and you dip your way back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What I love about your reimagination of it is that it changes the mood and makes it more, to me, more contemplative, mm. a little bit of melancholy. Mm. It's elegance that you add to it. When you first decided to do it, what made you decide to recover rigor mortis?
Yeah, so originally a friend of mine, Lucas Alvarado, he and I have been talking about doing some sort of cover. And for me, it's very, I didn't really want to cover something that just happened to be like in the top 10 charts that week, or, you know, something that would hopefully easily give me views or whatever. I just wanted to pick something that actually spoke to me. And again, because that was my, because at the time Kendrick was one of my favorite artists, and that was my favorite track of his, or at least the track that introduced me to him, I felt it was a perfect track. And the fact that Eric Reed, my teacher, had composed the track that that he sampled. And as far as the contemplative approach, you know, I think that's, for me, that's always there in all of Kendrick's more like bravado type tracks. You know, any track that he's talking about how great he is, I think there is this underlying, and I might be projecting it, but I think there's this underlying humbleness, or underlying like almost like poking fun at people that do that. And so I think that's something that has always interested me about him, because it's like he can say that I'm one of the greatest rappers alive and be undeniably correct about that, but at the same time I feel like he is so humbled by just the art of rap in general that he would never get too big-headed, if that makes any sense.
So if you could, for those that haven't seen the video, walk us through the video from beginning to end.
Yeah, for sure. So the beginning of it, firstly, is just me setting up the prepared piano and putting the things in the piano. But then I first start off with like the original theme, or the original motive that's from the track, the horn line that you mentioned. And then I play that with kind of a drum pattern that I set up with a prepared piano, but it's also very similar to the original drum pattern from the original track. And then I loop those things and then start to play some like a new chord progression over that, and then improvise over that chord progression. And that chord progression that, like you mentioned, is a bit more contemplative or emotional, and not as active or aggressive as the main track, just because I felt like that would be an interesting way or interesting thing to superimpose upon the original feel.
It's beautiful.
What I love about this is just the full circle of it, as you were talking about. The fact that rigor mortis itself was built off of sampled a contemporary Los Angeles jazz song that, as it turns out, your mentor composed. That was the song The Thorn, done by Willie Jones III from, I think, 2009. There is definitely, I think, a subgenre out there that you could describe as jazz covers of hip-hop songs and or the samples that were used in them. And I'm sure that's certainly, you know, part of it is that, you know, jazz musicians just grow up listening to a lot of music. And if you have been alive for the last 40 years, you have listened to hip-hop to some extent. I imagine, though, there is also pressure, especially on jazz musicians, given the market for jazz, right, which is very niche, to put it politely, that in order to be relevant to younger audiences, you have to make a nod to hip hop, or you have to pander to somehow by making sort of cover songs that people can recognize as, oh, he's doing Farside's passing me by, or he's doing the Quincy Jones loop behind passing me by, something along those lines. And I think for you, as someone who's trying to make it in this business, as someone who is trying to make it in, you know, with jazz, does that pressure exist, and how do you balance out that tension behind, on the one hand, paying homage to the music of what you grew up with, the music that you love, but doing it in a way that doesn't seem too obvious or too easy in a way, if that makes sense?
Yeah, totally. I think yes and no. Firstly, I think when you look at somebody like Kamasi Washington, another LA artist, he's kind of proven the fact that there is a market and a viability for somebody that's just playing pure jazz to actually be accepted and celebrated by young people. You know, Marcus Miller told me once that he compared some of these things to the fact that back in the day when his parents went to go see a Broadway musical, they could then go down to the Village Vanguard and hear a band play those same songs in sort of a more abstract way. And the thing about that is that, like, if they had just seen that Broadway musical, they knew the melodies, they knew the songs, and so therefore they could tolerate somebody kind of stretching that to a crazy extent. And I feel like that's one of the things that a lot of aspects of jazz education is missing, because, you know, we might learn these jazz standards that are very fun to play and very important to learn and so on and so forth, but, you know, my little brother, who's about to be 21 years old, didn't grow up listening to Stella by Starlight. So therefore, no matter how I play it, no matter, even if I put a bunch of, you know, like put a beat to it and all that kind of stuff, that is not a song or a melody that he can instantly recognize. But if I play, you know, Hotline Bling, mm-hmm. and then start to mess around with it, it's the same thing, in my opinion, as somebody taking, you know, I've Got Rhythm and messing around with it back in the day, because it's taking a popular song and then taking it and stretching it out and doing whatever you want to it as a jazz artist.
And I think that's part of the sound of LA, is that our tendency to put a lot of genres together on one song. We see this evidenced clearly in To Pimp a Butterfly.
Hit me! When the four corners of this cocoon collide, you'll slip through the cracks, hoping that you'll survive. Gather your weight, take a deep look inside. Are you really who they idolize? To Pimp a Butterfly.
We are genre agnostic, right? We put a lot of things together, but jazz keeps floating up in these LA conversations, particularly because of Kamasi and because of yourself. How do you feel about jazz and hip-hop and the melding of these two things in a lot of new releases?
Yeah, I think it's kind of just the natural progression. You know, when I listen to Kendrick, it reminds me of jazz, even outside of the songs that have an obvious jazz influence, like the way that he floats over the bar line sometimes, the way that he decides randomly that he wants to add this other element and like layer his voice with an effect on it or something like that. Like it's very similar to the way that jazz musicians kind of are playing within the form, but that's at the same time disregard the form completely, you know? And I think, it just makes sense that he would be attracted to jazz, and those two things would come together.
Riding with the boys and girls, and we're high. All we want to do is have a good time. Young, wild, and reckless is how we live life. Pray that we make it to 21.
And at the end of the day, I think jazz artists and jazz musicians and jazz music is the foundation of pretty much everything that comes out of America, you know, and so therefore, like, it just completely makes sense, for sure.
One of the more jazzier cuts from Section 80 is actually an outro. Another one of my favorites, it's called Absol's Outro, and that's produced by Terrace Martin.
What's your life about? Enlighten me. Is you gonna live on your knees or die on your feet? It's fire in the street. Fire in my swisher. Fire in between the two legs of your little sister. Just get a sip of this elixir before they crop us out the picture. I never seen a crop circle, but I seen cops circle the block. I puff squares, but I swear one day I'ma stop. My nerves itch.
on the brink of my career when my peers struggle for employment.
You've got a lot on this song. Just a potpourri of situations on here. You got rap, drums, horns, vocals, chorus. To me, sort of an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that really cool. If you had to rearrange this song, like someone was like, listen, we want you to rearrange Absol's outro, who would you ask to join you on drums, horns, vocals?
Ooh, that's really tough. I think, that's really tough. One of the things that I heard just listening to it now is how similar the feel is. It's really sped up, but how similar it is to a second line rhythm.
I would have Tammy came across a real man who didn't play games like children. My nigga cheated on his girlfriend with his girlfriend's girlfriend, let the world in.
Absol is like falling on the four a lot, and like he's accenting the four a lot, and so I probably would try to figure out how I could do it like a more New Orleans-y second line kind of thing, and you know, hit up like John Batiste, and even though he's a piano player, but he's a friend of mine, and his whole Stay Human band with Ibanda on tuba and Joe Saylor on drums, and I think that might be a fun and totally different way of doing it that still is very tied to the original feeling from the song, I think.
Well, I have to say, you know, speaking of arrangement, you know, I don't know if I mentioned that at the top, but I think you're a prolific arranger. You're responsible for some of my favorite jams, especially The Weight on Nate's album. Like, the first time I listened to that, I was like, you know, am I getting emotional? This is what I was thinking the first time. Just let out a few thug tears. But yeah, so I just wanted to put that in as just a very cool thing. I asked you the arrangement question because I know you've done some beautiful arrangements before. So I really want to see what you would do with that.
No, I appreciate that. And yeah, it's always, you know, I definitely always try to respect either like the melody or the original intent of whatever song I'm arranging, because I think, you know, if you're not respecting those two things or acknowledging those things, then you're writing a different song. So, you know.
If you had to describe a Section 80 in three words, Section 80 of the album in three words, what would they be?
I'd say honest, emotional, and honest again. I know that's cheating, but yeah, it's just really... Kendrick is in general such an honest artist, and I feel like that's so lacking, and it's one of the things that speaks to me the most about his artistry that I feel like it can't be, you know, ignored.
I'm just glad you didn't say jazzy, because that would have been a little too on the nose.
That's true. That was my fourth choice.
That'll do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Chris Bowers. His most recent release is Heroes and Misfits. Thank you so much for coming to be with us, and we want you to let people know where they can find you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you can find me online. My website is just chrisbowers.com. It's Chris with a K. And on social media, it's just Chris Bowers Music on all the different social medias.
What are you likely to be cooking up?
Oh my gosh. Working on Dear White People Season 2. I'm working on a documentary about Bethany Hamilton, another documentary about a football team in East St. Louis, and then doing a lot of work with Kobe Bryant. He is setting up a film studio, and we have a lot of different projects that we're working on. So those are kind of the main things.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wang, and Morgan Rhodes. Our theme music is Crowned Ones by Thess One from People Under the Stairs. Thanks to him for the hookup. Heat Rocks is produced by myself, Morgan Rhodes, and Kara Hart. And today's show was engineered by Nick Liao, edited by me, and mixed by Kara. We are part of the Max Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Mad City, Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Heat Rocks Pod. You can find a link to our Facebook group on our webpage, heatrockspod.com. That's where we'll post show notes for every episode, including a track listing of everything you've heard today and more goodies. Again, that's at heatrockspod.com. Good to see you, Oliver.
Good to see you, Morgan.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.